Okay, welcome back, and I hope you can sit back and relax and enjoy the next couple of hours. We're going to do something that we do occasionally, and that's pay tribute to something that will never happen again. There will be no other voice to compare to the voice of Mario Lanza. We've talked about it. You've heard him sing. And if you like it, welcome aboard. If you're new to it, welcome. And if you don't like it, welcome anyway. I hope you'll stay and listen, because our guest is uniquely well-informed, remarkably articulate, erudite, and all the rest of it. He's down there in New Zealand, and he has written a book called The One Tenor. The One Tenor. He is Lindsay. Well, here we go. Now, if you look at his name, you can go a number of different ways. So I'm going to, again, defer to Lindsay to set the stage here. Good morning. Or is it evening over there?
Neither, Jeff. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's a 5-hour time lag between where you are and where I am, you're a day behind. Okay, so you're 5 hours ahead the day before, if you get my meaning.
There is tomorrow, then.
Well, yes,
you've proven it.
Listening to your show earlier, I'm not so sure about that. But I hope that listeners don't mind taking time out from conspiracies and aliens and talking about someone who was of this earth, but if you ever wanted to make the case that we've been blessed or visited by divinity, we could do no better than repair to Mario Lanza to illustrate the point.
I think that was beautifully said, and I could not agree more. Superhuman, perhaps supernatural, are words that can also be applied there. Now, here's a man who left us in 1959, and to this day, he is still inspiring young singers all over the world, old singers all over the world, people of all ages. Now, I would like to suggest that in 5 or 10 years, Pavarotti, Domingo, they'll be remembered, of course. I wonder if in 50 years plus they will be as celebrated as is Mario Lanza. I rather doubt it. This is something unique, something special, something that just doesn't happen, and yet it did. And if people were able to clone Mario Lanza physically, you still would not necessarily get the same voice, because he was a composite of his life experiences, his hormones, if you will. We all have a road to walk upon, and that road shapes us. And what came out of his soul, as it were, in vocal form, was unique to him. Even if you duplicated him physically, that doesn't guarantee you'll have the same person inside.
Well, indeed, someone might have that voice, although that much is hard to imagine. But what he brought to the voice was, as you put it, the soul, his distinctive personality, that unique insight into ways of forming words and formulating phrases. That is the essence of his uniqueness. And that's why I called my book, Jeff, The One Tenor, because we have the three tenors, and you mentioned them, and they were all inspired by Mario. We have the 10 tenors, we have the 20 tenors, for all I know, we might have the 100 tenors somewhere, but when all said and done, there was only one like Mario, and that was Mario himself. And it's no accident that that's why he inspires, as you say, the current generation, previous generations, and I don't doubt future generations. He's the one who makes them stop in their tracks when they're kids and say, my goodness, that's what I want to sound like. That's what I want to be in life. That's what I want to express in life. And even I was quite surprised in writing one of the articles for my book, the Russian baritone, Dmitry Vorostovsky. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, it wasn't any of the conventional singers, it was Mario Lanza. He had a thrilling voice, and when I first heard it, I said to myself, my God, I want to sound like that.
You just coined another word that is eminently applicable, thrilling. It is a thrilling, thrilling sound to hear. And I would suggest that this voice will never be duplicated. It just can't be, because of the unique combination of man, his experience, the physical vehicle itself, the way he phrased words was so impeccably perfect that many of his recordings are unequivocally definitive. There, that means that's it. It can't be done any better. These were definitive recordings, interpretations, readings of songs, and in some cases arias, some cases operetta. He did it all, and it is a fluke of nature. And he didn't live very long. And look at how people are moved to this day. I want to repeat the story I did last time. I had a friend in Santa Barbara. He was a may still be a psychiatrist, and he knew all about Mario, and he said, I have one patient, she's in her late 80s, and Jeff, she literally is still alive, she's fought to stay alive just so she can listen to that voice all her life, just so she can hear the voice. That's amazing. That is truly amazing. And I understand
Yes, quite so. Me too. I note that on the YouTube page that has my interview with Konstantin Kalinikos, who was Mario's main conductor and accompanist, someone has posted there to say Mario saved his life when he was in his teens. I think he was undergoing various crises, as people tend to do at that age, but he discovered Mario's voice, and he said, that's what saved him. And like the person you cite, I stay alive to hear Mario Lanza. And for someone to have that effect, I mean, what a true humanitarian. And I think, just going back to my initial quip about conspiracies and aliens, we're both aware that Mario was attacked from all quarters, ostensibly for reasons not to do with his singing and his voice.
Correct.
But really, what lay behind those attacks was a conspiracy, and it was perpetrated by aliens in the sense that they're in some form subhuman, non-human. They're of this earth and in human form, but to my mind, not fully human. When they behold the spectacle of greatness like that, they cannot stand it. And they want to tear it down.
Isn't
and that was
the
one
truth?
Of the crosses that Mario had to bear. And you mentioned his early death. One thing, I don't think a light as bright as that can burn for too long ever anyway. But the pressures placed upon him by the envy and the hatred of the good for being the good that occurred were unendurable in the end.
And he, of course, in the singing, you can hear it, was such a sensitive man, that these barbs, these efforts to tear him down and destroy him, certainly hurt on orders of magnitude more than they would in an average person. He was astonishingly sensitive, and it came out in his words, his singing. I don't know how he did it, because when you listen, a lot of people listen to him and they don't hear it. They don't hear what he was doing. They don't hear the nuances, the color. The sounds that came out of that man's body were ungodly. The coloration. My brother called it once the northern lights in a throat.
In the throat, yes.
They were literally just of almost every color of the rainbow pouring forth. And to be the custodian of something like that, in and of itself is enough to take, most people down. It's just too much. It's overpowering. And everybody that came up to him, Mario, can you sing? Mario, can you sing? Sing for us. He wasn't accepted by so many people around him as a person. It's just a regular guy. He wanted to be just a regular guy to a lot of people who wouldn't allow that. They always referred to him as the voice, you know, the man. And he had to do a lot to try to deal with this duality of being constantly nagged at, taken advantage of ruthlessly by people, as you said, who would want to destroy something beautiful. What is that about this species that is so prevalent? We see something of beauty, and yet we want somehow, is it envy? Is it some kind of jealousy? We have a lust to to take it down. I don't get it.
Yes, well, I think that that very syndrome will prove to be terminal, Jeff. I think
we're headed toward that. Absolutely,
My worldview differs from yours in many respects, I'm sure, but I'm probably as pessimistic about our immediate future, because I think our philosophical premises have caught up with us, and one of those is this very thing, the hatred of the good for being the good. Not because there's anything wrong with it, but because it's as good as it is. And men cannot stand the spectacle. And I think they will suffer the consequences of these negative premises, which are manifest in every walk of life, not just one that we're talking about.
Yeah, I agree. This talk we've had, Lindsay and yours truly, I hope all of you are there and you would like to hear some of this, but I just wanted to say that to this day, and you sent me a recording, you mentioned the recording, I played it, I still get, not every time, but in many cases, I get goosebumps. And just my body reacts to that. I'm hearing something I know I'll never hear from another source. And I'm so grateful that we have it. It's amazing. It's a remarkable, amazing, it's something that is really almost beyond words. It's that incredible. And you see these talent programs, Lindsay, you know, and people will take a piece of Nessun Dorma and sing it and the crowd goes crazy. That's all well and good. That's wonderful because they're actually hearing something of an operatic nature that most of them have never heard before, and they're getting the beauty of it, and that's fine. But these are people who are just grasping on to a little straw in the wind. That's all it is. But more power to them, I guess. What would you like to hear first? You sent me a list of things, and I've got a few things. And it is springtime. It's the time of falling in love and all of that. We have a lot to listen to. And what would you like to hear first?
Well, over to you, Jeff. You're the host. We could go chronologically, if you like, and start with the 1947 Madame Butterfly at the Hollywood Bowl, because that's what really started it all. That's where he was signed up for a 7-year contract with MGM, after that appearance, and got deflected from the path towards opera that, this recording shows he was definitely headed for. Or we can start with something a little shorter and more in tune with the, well, of course, the Madame Butterfly Loved You. It is about love, clearly. But, we've got a few English ballads lined up as well,
let's do the Madame Butterfly first. We'll do that first because, it is in Italian, and Italian, of course, is a magnificently beautiful language to sing. The issue with English is that in most cases, it's difficult to sing, and yet Mario was able to do it so effortlessly, he made it essentially as beautiful as Italian. That's another gift he had.
Well, again, that was a respect in which he was unique. I doubt that any opera singer, and for that matter, any pop singer, and this was mentioned in the interview that I did with Jose Carreras, he mentioned three singers whose diction inspired him in particular, Giuseppe Di Stefano, mm-hmm. Mario Lanza, and Frank Sinatra. And they're right there at the top of his pantheon for the beauty and clarity of their diction.
All right. Here we go. This is the duet from the opera Madame Butterfly, and I think you'll find it to be quite exciting. This is on the stage of the Hollywood Bowl, outside, in the evening, not in a recording studio, no tricks, just the natural sound, and he would have been 26 years of age, I believe, at this time.
26 years of age, and just simultaneously was touring with the Bel Canto Trio, which included the soprano we hear him with here, Frances Yend.
Yes.
And the other singer in that trio was George London,
Became
a very famous Wagnerian bass.
Yep. All right, here we go.
Thank you. Perché non fugga più, io togermito ti serro palpitante, sei mia.
Imagine what it must have been like to be there, Jeff.
I was just doing that very thing. I think that, and I did talk to someone who was there, and that person said that the crowd was absolutely mesmerized by what they were hearing. Now, this is outdoors. Understand that you're not hearing something in a recording studio. You're hearing only of really a relatively limited sound of what the voice, the full voice, was like. This was outdoors in the summer at the Hollywood Bowl. All right, we'll move to a studio recording next, so stay right there as Lindsay and I continue in this program of spring, the year 2014. Be right back. Okay, let's get right back to our conversation and our music tonight. So sit back and turn your speakers up and enjoy. We're going to be playing a lot of different kinds of things. You know, for me, interestingly enough, something that I feel told me when I heard it, it foretold the kind of astonishing emotion that could be legitimately, not contrived, not a, there's no affectation, real emotion. There were in this one little tiny song from the Celanese radio program, 1945, I guess it was. And the song is All Alone. You know what I'm talking about.
I do, the Irving Berlin song.
That's right. And I wish he had recorded that with a reprise in the Coke show, because he did something with the lyrics that made you feel that he really cared and he was really wondering what the person was doing. And how old was he in 1945? 24, 23?
24 years old he would have been, and he was substituting for Jan Pierce, and I think he was pretty terrified about it all, but there's very little evidence of his being terror-stricken in those recordings. He sings with a remarkable assurance for someone who's just at that point an unknown. All alone by the telephone, there is no one else but you. All alone, I am so all alone, waiting for a ring, a ting-a-ling. I mean, the lyrics are a bit silly, really, when you just say them like that. But he made them sound really good, and he made you feel he was. That was so poignant, sitting there by the telephone, waiting for a call from his loved one.
Wondering where you are.
Where you are, and
how you are.
And if you are all alone, too.
You are all alone, too. Mm. Now listen to how he says this. Now this is a kid, but there's some unearthly genius in there of emotion that I think this was the first thing I can remember him singing where that special transcendence was quite obvious. Here it is. It's very short. Just listen to the words.
There is no one else but you. All alone, I'm so alone, waiting for a ring, a ting-a-ling. I'm all alone, every evening.
Meant it. You heard it. At least I hope you did.
Yeah, remarkable. And, you know, what must have been scary for him is that those performances were live. He was going out live to air when he did that, and for that radio show, if you made a flub, there's no going back and correcting it and editing in the correction later. The flub goes out there too, and of course we know he did make a couple, and we still have them now in all their glory. In fact, it's wonderful to hear those things, because it just reminds you that someone who seems so godly in some very attractive respects was still human.
He was petrified, and yet in that little tiny songlet, he showed something to me that was a harbinger of enormous gifts to come that would manifest themselves, that thank goodness we have today. Now, I'm going to jump forward here real quick, and this is a rather short song. This is a studio recording song from his Coca-Cola radio program. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'll just play it because it is springtime. But just get an idea, again, of the feeling that the enunciation, just really remarkable.
I recall the mad delight of a lovely dance and the stroll into a night trembling with romance. There I told her of her terms. How could I resist? Suddenly within my arms she was held and kissed. Oh, that kiss in the dark was to her supreme. Just a kiss in the dark, but it kindled the spark, the awakening of love.
Just a short one that's not played very often and kind of captures a lot of things in it.
A Kiss in the Dark by Victor Herbert. And both those selections you've just played really demonstrated Mario's ability to go from little throttle to full throttle in a nanosecond. All of a sudden he's gone from crooning to an operatic B-flat. And you think, where on earth did that come from? Did that come from the same throat? And you're reminded of what Sammy Kahn said, that the man had a soft and loud pedal in his throat. It scared the hell out of you.
Yeah. Sammy told me much the same thing face to face, and I will never forget the look on his face, his eyes especially. When I first mentioned the name, his eyes literally lost focus. He was taken, swept back, just gone. And then he rolled his head back and he said, "Oh my God, Mario Lanza, what a voice." And he was stunned that I would even bring it up. He wasn't expecting it. We were just talking about other things. And that was really a fun thing to do. He was a very talented man and we'll never forget. He broke into, I just remember this, Be My Love, and sang it to me, the last, 30 seconds of it. And he sang, and when he got to the final note, he stopped singing and took his index finger and extended it straight up over his head and pointed to the heavens. True story.
Well, that it was such a hard thing to do. The song as written, the tessitura of it, you had a series of G's below the high C, but that's even a G is getting pretty high. And then on the word eternally, he moved up from the G to a B flat, but he still had to regroup and come back for the final phrase. If you will be my love, and that's where Sammy would have put his index finger
what
up
he did.
To say, Mario, take it from here.
You will be my, and he just stopped and he pointed up. It was, I know exactly where I was standing when he said it. It was funny. Okay, what we're doing here is a little tribute to beauty of our species, as evidenced by singing, which is much more than singing. You hear so many people, well, there's no more music. Pop music today is not music. It doesn't deserve to be called music. But this was musical. Melody, harmony, musicality, and yet one voice, what was it about this voice? There were opera singers who could make as much noise, not many, but some. They certainly had the following, and yet they reached, by comparison, a tiny fraction of the people that Lanza reached. He reached hundreds of millions around the world, and still to this day continues to do that. It's unprecedented.
Well, I think one of the secrets, Jeff, is that he valued so intensely. He was a passionate valuer. And it doesn't matter what he's singing about. He could be singing about God. He could be singing about his lover. He could be singing to a girl or about a girl named Marquita or Lolita. He could be singing about trees, for heaven's sake, which he did on one occasion. But each time he makes it or him or her sound like the most important thing ever. You know, we often repair to what he said. I sing each word as though it were my last on earth. And that was true no matter what the subject of the lyrics, as though it were his last on earth. He was a passionate valuer. And in that sense, too, he goes against the grain of the current culture of headbanging. Headbanging caterwauling is what I call it, which is the philosophy
too
of nihilism. N-I-H-I-L-I-S-M.
Nihilism.
Worship of nothing.
Precisely.
Worship of ugliness for the sake of ugliness. So
he
went against that grain, and it's why it's a bit difficult for him to get attention now. But the reassuring thing, as I'm sure we'll be discussing when we get to the Nessun Dorma, is all the comments from people from the current generation on YouTube who are just blown away by him. So there's.
By the way, you said something that was very important. Men really were just enchanted with this voice, overwhelmed, because it was such a masculine, sensual, sexy voice. No pretense, just raw, brute sensuality. And the women heard it as if he was singing to them. Each one of them felt that he was singing directly to them. And that is a unique and, as I said before, unprecedented gift. The women felt something. The men felt something. Two entirely different things. But he met both needs and surpassed them so far in so many cases that it's a life-changing experience for some.
I think he had a very vivid image in his mind, especially when he sang the love songs, that he had the object of the lyrics he was singing very much in his mind at the time. And I'm always quite moved by his appearance with his wife, Betty, on the Christopher movie that was recorded a couple of years before he died, where he talks about being part of something that is devoted to the beautiful rather than the ugly. And then when Betty comes on, he puts his arm around her and he says to the priest who's conducting the interview, "Am I not the luckiest guy around because I found such a true..." I'm getting choked up here, Jeff. True, lovable, wonderful partner, and the love between them.
Yes.
And so when you see that, you understand where that expression in his singing came from. And here's a really bizarre thing. One of the biographers of Mario, Roland Bessette, features in my book, I interview him about his theory that Mario had bipolar disorder.
No.
And he cites that interview, the Christopher interview, as Mario being at the manic end of his manic depression. And I look at that and wonder, I'm just aghast that anyone could look at that and think that it represented something psychologically wrong.
No, it represented something psychologically magnificent.
The
expression of undying, absolutely, unqualified love for a woman who had stood by him through already in their young lives, several lifetimes of grief and pain and no matter what his excesses, he loved that woman, and that's the truth. That's the bottom line.
And of course, it was reciprocated, which is what comes across so strongly and was manifest also in the fact that she died just a few months after he did because she just couldn't go on without him. But there, I think, in that interview, some of it's hokum and said for the benefit of the priest and the captain, but he is heroic and romantic and absolutely adorable. And it doesn't matter, as you say, if you're a man or a woman, you cannot not notice those qualities.
Let's play something, and I want to do this because I didn't do it on St. Patrick's Day, and I should have, and I did. So I'm going to make up for my own error, and we're going to hear what is almost universally acclaimed to be the definitive recording of this all-time classic song.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you must go and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be Danny boy, I love you so. But when ye come and all the flowers are dying, if I am dead, as dead I well may be, he'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an Ave there for me. Tread above me, and all my grave will warmer, sweeter be. For you'll bend and tell me that you love me, and I shall sleep in peace until you come to me.
Okay. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Just leaves you kind of stunned when he says soft. It's so soft, you're reminded of white, fleecy clouds. It's just, I don't know how. Was there not a story about Besame Mucho, that he had a rivalry with someone, and I've forgotten now. He said to get even with some, he got angry at somebody, and he recorded Besame Mucho, and outdid the guy who had the original hit. I've forgotten the story now, but it was something like that.
I don't think I ever knew that story, Jeff, but he sure as hell would be able to do that if that was his intention, to get even with someone. But I think he had such a high regard for his fellow artists. You do know the story of Al Martino. And
I think it was tongue-in-cheek, but
Martinato.
he had a lot of fun. Now, you have that, one. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you mentioned what he does with the word soft, and he did the same thing in the first verse on the word hushed, when the valley's hushed and white with snow. Just that soft pedal coming in straight after the loud pedal with no break in between. He's in full voice, and then suddenly you've got pianissimo. It's remarkable. And I quite like looking at the technical aspects, because it explains to me in part how he could achieve his magic. I mean, mainly, of course, it came from the soul, but he had to have the mechanism and the musical intelligence to be able to put it into practice.
I don't still understand how he was able to take those lyrics and make them sound as he did. It's stunning. Now, you've got one on your list here. Tell Me Tonight.
Well, I know how much you love the material from the Coke shows, so I wasn't going to try to skirt around that, but I thought, which Coke songs do we not hear very often? And this one was interesting because, of course, it was originally written for a previous tenor named Jan Kapura, and a previous movie tenor as well. I mean, he was a full-fledged opera singer in his own right, but he did appear in movies, and there was one called Tell Me Tonight, from which this is the title song. So Mario recorded it as part of the Coke show, and again, technically, it's just a fascinating study, because what happens here is a classic thing with those Coke show numbers. They start in a relatively unchallenging key for Mario, and then the orchestra bridges between the first and second verses, and in the process modulate. That is to say, they take the music up a tone or a semitone, so that it's more difficult when he comes back in, and he comes back in fuller voice than in the first verse. And then when he gets to the words, beneath the moon's dreamy light, on the word light, he has to really introduce what we call covering. And so all the people on your forum who like to discuss covering, listen to this song, because when he gets to the words dreamy light, on the word light, in the second verse, not the first, that's covering. And then he stays covered for an absolutely spectacular flourish at the end.
All right, we're going to take our top-of-the-hour break with that setup and come back and revisit a couple things that Lindsay just said, and then we'll play Tell Me Tonight in just a few minutes. And he describes it perfectly. It's one of those things that a singer would sing the words. With Lanza, they came to life. It's just almost eerie in a most beautiful way that, again, leaves one rather short and on the verge of running out of words. All right, we'll come right back as we continue with all of you in just a few minutes, so hang on. Okay, welcome back to 3, and we'll again turn away from the angst and grief of the world around us, and it has seemingly never been at a higher pitch. Speaking of pitch, Tell Me Tonight. Let's set that up again, and we'll let them hear it. And we're talking with Lindsay Perigo, P-E-R-I-G-O, the man who wrote the one tenor, as we mentioned early on. I remember, now I opened the program up, I was going to have you pronounce your name. There are several ways of pronouncing it. The Italian way, Perigo. And then there's Perigo, as some say. And you will say...
Perigo. But I think the Italians would stress the first syllable too, Perigo. But it's not an Italian word, it's Portuguese, meaning danger.
Uh-oh. Is that what it really means? It is a vocabulary word meaning danger?
Yes. Yes, it is. Some of my friends here call me Danger Man. Not just because of my name, I might add.
Well, you seem like such a nice chap to everyone listening. I can't see that appellation sticking for very long. Lindsay Perigo. All right. And, Lindsay has been a fixture in the world of Mario Lanza for decades. He is a man respected and looked up to by an awful lot of people and is an incredible library of knowledge and information and wisdom. He has been there. He is a musically adept human being, understands great music, and understands Mario Lanza like few others. And so we're always overjoyed to have him on the program. It's our second appearance doing these kinds of little, retrospective looks at something that is, in a way, as current today as it was the day it was sung. And I remember talking to Terry Robinson, his best friend, and he was at every recording session at Radio Recorders in Hollywood, and Terry said that almost without fail, after each song was sung, not only would he get a standing ovation from the orchestra, but he would thank them, and he would go over kind of off by himself and sit down and just be quiet. He was that expended. He put that much of himself into it. It was a very interesting observation.
Well, I think you can hear that very clearly in the track that we're about to hear. As I say, it starts out in a relatively unchallenging key, and then, as was standard for the Coke Show numbers, went up a notch for the second verse. Usually the orchestra bridged the key change. Sometimes Mario had to sustain that himself. In Beautiful Love, for instance, or If I Loved You, the burden of changing key is on him, and the orchestra, as it were, follows. But here the orchestra changes key, and you know that Mario is going to do pyrotechnics because they've moved up, and he comes in at double the volume he did the first verse in, and then he takes it to a spectacular ending. And you feel, I think he also said to Terry that every time he sang a song, he died a little because it took so much out of him. And you absolutely can hear that in this song.
He was singing on the principle, not the interest. An old expression too.
Mm-hmm. Quite
okay.
So.
Here we go.
Love, I give you my heart. If you will take this gift I bring you, tell me tonight. Love, if I must depart, if you would hush the song I sing, you'll tell me tonight. So speak or never again. My love refrain will greet you neath the moon's dreamy light. Say with those lips divine,
I bring you, tell me, don't I love? If I must depart, if you would hush the song I sing you, tell me.
It's really overwhelming.
Now, you could play the version by Jan Kapura, for whom the song was written, and not taking anything away from him at all, he sings it beautifully. But Mario sings it beautifully plus. There's that extra passion, the extra urgency, the extra intensity that makes it, as you just said, overwhelming. And you can well understand that he'd need to sit down in a corner and felt that he'd just died a little bit.
It's something that 2 minutes and 57 seconds, 2 minutes and 57 seconds, and you hear that and you never forget it.
No.
It's truly remarkable. All right, what would you like to hear next, since you're the guest of honor?
Well, I do want to play this Nessun Dorma from a few years later, Serenade movie, 1955.
Mm-hmm.
In part because, I want to engage in some good humored banter here. I do have a problem persuading, yourself and Derek Mannering sometimes that there was life after 1952. It didn't all end with the Coke shows.
Well, there was Rose, don't forget. Rosemarie, I've no, quite, of course. And, it was a time, I don't know how he did it. He smoked unfiltered cigarettes. He certainly had a habit of, he liked champagne. You don't do that when you have a golden voice. And, it became darker and richer and in some ways more commanding and more powerful. This is a big argument in the Lanza community about which, quote, which voice was better, pre-1953, post-1953. The answer is, Lindsay?
I would say he was good and bad with all his voices. You could take recordings from any period of his career and find bad ones and find absolutely outstanding ones, and most being close to outstanding, if not outstanding. But there were duds. And, of course, he had that dreadful session in 1955 with Lanza on Broadway, which is, I'd always say, the worst album ever recorded by anyone, not just by Mario, but it is truly atrocious. And it's incomprehensible, unthinkable, unimaginable that it ever saw the light of day. But God help us, it's still out there. The tracks from it still are there to make us shudder. But just a few months after that, he recorded the very album you're talking about, the Cavalcade of Show Tunes, which included Rosemarie, and he was in spectacular voice and spectacular spirits. And the same is true of the soundtrack for the movie Serenade. This is going back earlier in 1955 now, where he did his most serious operatic singing for the movies and on record, and again, he was in stunning voice. With the exception, or so we thought, of Nessun Dorma. When that came out on the Serenade album, it just wasn't up to the standard of, say, O Paradiso, or the Federico's Lament, or his singing in the Otello duet with Licia Albanese. Nessun Dorma just fell short. And long before we knew, there was another one, an alternate version. Lanza fans, I remember one in Australia, the first time I visited him, one of the first things he mentioned to me was, wasn't Nessun Dorma a disappointment? And this was before it had become a household aria, thanks to Pavarotti and the World Cup. Well, then it transpired just a few years ago that, in fact, the take in the movie, the version that we heard on the Serenade album, was in fact a second take, and that he'd done a first take, and the first take was everything that it ought to have been and was up to the standard of the singing on the rest of the album. And you can only listen to it and think, why on earth did they use the inferior take in the movie? And my theory is that the second take was quicker. He didn't do the rubati, that's pausing, robbing certain bars of their value by holding on to them and then speeding up and then slowing down again. He didn't do any of that in the second take. And the movie was overshot, so time was of the essence. And I think when it came to shooting the thing, they decided that they would use the inferior take because it was shorter. That's the only reason I can think of, certainly, musically speaking. This one that we're about to hear is vastly superior. And the funny thing is, it gets attacked. This version gets attacked. When it came out, I made a big announcement and said, look, this is the take that we always long for. And then people started pulling it apart. And I found that incomprehensible. And to this day, you'll find people who say, oh, but he says Nessun instead of Nessun in the opening bars. Good.
Not relevant.
Now, it's on YouTube, this version, and they've overlaid footage from the movie over it. But what's interesting to me, Jeff, is that no one there is worried about Nessun, and this has scored almost 2 million hits, which I think is the highest number of hits Mario has on YouTube for any of his songs.
Yes, I think you're right. So let's listen. Here it is, and you can see this on YouTube. When you see it on YouTube, again, there are a number of scenes from the film that were overlaid to make a visual backdrop for the singing, which was not the version in the film. So you had to cover it with something. But there are parts that are matched up to him singing, and you can see him singing it in places. So here is the take that was lost for decades and then found.
Fredda stanza, guardi le stelle che tremano d'amore, e di speranza.
Well, somehow I don't think that was a man whose voice was finished.
No, that was devastatingly magnificent, and what a shame it was in the film. Just one of those things. Like, he was right about Beloved in The Student Prince. He was correct. That was a far superior take. Well, I don't know if far superior, it was a superior take.
Well, he didn't stand his ground regarding it, though, obviously, because he filmed lip-syncing to the second inferior take, and as we know, he also agreed to do a couple of numbers for the movie that were execrable, namely the title song.
Thank you very much. They were absolutely two of the worst songs I have ever heard, period.
Oh, boy, they were bad. And what a shame, because in most respects, it was a fantastic movie, and certainly Mario's meatiest movie by far. It wasn't fluff like the others. I mean, I don't want to in any way diminish his other movies, but The Serenade was a real attempt at something serious, including his singing. And it didn't deserve to be marred by such a bad title song. And the other inclusion, My Destiny. Again, that was our friend Sammy Cahn, I think.
Sammy was at the bottom of his success at that time. If he would, those are forever shameful. And if the movie had those two removed, this version of Nessun Dorma put in, just those two little things would have made an enormous difference, I think, and there's how many songs were out there that could have been used beside My Destiny. You can't even count them all, but, be that as it may.
Well, you can see what they were trying to do, though, because there was the leitmotif associated with that song. Whenever things were becoming dark and somber and ominous, you'd hear the strains of My Destiny.
All right.
And he'd sung the lyrics, and I am chained to my destiny, meaning I'm chained to Joan Fontaine. And, of course, the battle was going on between her and Sarita Montiel. How odd that both of them died just recently, long outlived Mario. But you could see what they were trying to do with the song, and it was a good idea, but it was not well executed.
Didn't work. It failed. The music was, as you say, the motifs didn't work. It just didn't work. And I did interview Joan Fontaine, and I had a photograph. Did I tell you this story?
No.
I had a photograph in my pocket when I went to interview her, and it was the actual scene where he is gouging her face out from the sculpture. There's a sculpture of her head in the film, and she's an expensive vamp and was taking advantage of him and so forth. Anyway, he ripped her face off the sculpture, and I had a still shot of that, and I pulled it out of my pocket, and I gently laid it on my left knee, and she said, "Oh my God." That's all she said. It was quite amusing.
Well, somebody else took a photo of Mario to Joan Fontaine for her to sign, and she said apparently
she
was understand.
No, she didn't.
And, and she said, "That's Mario Lanza," and yeah. He said, "Yes, I'm a big admirer." And she said, "Well, get him to sign it."
Yeah, yeah. No, she was a little acid. No, she didn't get along with him in the film at all. She considered him far beneath her status and stature. Considered him to be rather a peasant, I think, in terms of her nobility. It was clear, and that's one of the reasons I took the photo, to see what she would do. It was pretty much as expected. Okay, we have some more things you'd like to play. Now, this one is not one I know all that well. Love is the Sweetest Thing. We'll go through the bottom, Todd, on this. I want to make sure I get all these in. That's my producer. Tell us about this, Love is the Sweetest Thing.
Well, again, this is from the Coke Show period, but there's a strange story associated with it. It was released on the album The Touch of Your Hand, And then it was also, many, many years later, decades later, included on the complete Coke collection put out by Damon Lanza, Mario's son. And when I went through the complete collection, I realized that a number of songs were actually different from the broadcast, or the supposedly broadcast versions, that had been put out on the Touch of Your Hand LP. Not only different, but better. And this one is one of them, because in the version released on the Touch of Your Hand LP, he flubs the lyrics at one point. Whatever fate may bring, he says, instead of whatever fate may send. And in the version on the Damon Lanza CDs, he gets it right. Not only that, but he sings it better. And I think it might have been you who cleared up the mystery as to why some of those versions ended up on that LP, that they were the rejects from the recordings for the Coke show. Anyway, the actual broadcast versions are on the Damon Lanza CDs, and this one we're about to hear. Again, it's the standard pattern of taking the key up halfway through and a spectacular finish. But it's Mario all ablaze singing Love is the Sweetest Thing.
MGM's new Technicolor musical, Skirts Ahoy, starring Esther Williams, Joan Evans, and Vivian Blaine, concerns the madcap adventures of three beautiful waves. In their headlong pursuit of romance, they dedicate themselves to the proposition that love is the sweetest thing. A proposition, incidentally, that Mario Lanza proves right now as he sings the song of that very name.
Love is the sweetest thing. What else on earth could ever bring such happiness to everything as love's old story? Love is the strangest thing. No song of birds upon the wing shall in our hearts more sweetly sing than love's old story. Whatever heart may desire, whatever fate may send, this is the tale that never will tire. This is the song without. Thing, the oldest yet the latest thing. I only hope that fate may bring love story to you. This is the tale that never will tire. This is the song without end. Love is the greatest thing, the oldest yet the latest thing. I only hope that fate may bring love story.
One of the remarkable things about that, Jeff, is it shows something, again, unique about Mario, his oohs and ees. The oo and e vowels are hard up the top of your register, and most singers modify them sometimes to the point where they're not recognizable. They sound more like an ah, or the oo sounds more like an o. But Mario just kept his vowels absolutely pure and somehow was able to do that right up to the top of his register. As you heard there with his ending, Love Story to You, there's no doubt that that's an oo vowel. It's not
every
y'all.
Time I heard the word you, blue, knew any of that. Yes. I noticed that as a very young man. I said, this is different. This is unique. I've never heard this before. And you're right.
And another instance of it is with the E vowel, the song Because. You know that long sustained because, you speak to me in the middle of the thing. And again, his E is unmistakably an E. Now, listen to many other singers, and it sounds more like because you speak to May, M-A-Y, and that's the only way they can get up there and preserve their vocal line. But he just blazes with full resonance, even though he's keeping those vowels absolutely pure.
Okay, now, let's see. I've got several more for you here. I'm going to try and get this... See if I can get this out of the CD without breaking it. It's a brand new one, and I think I can do it. This is what we can do is step up to the 1959 recording and get that one. I'll let you pronounce it, my friend.
Vagissima Sembianza.
This is exactly what I was going to say.
It was on the tip of your tongue, and it means...
I can't even say Perigo, so don't challenge me.
Vagissima sembianza perigo. There you go. There's a chance.
That works.
It means vague semblance, and it's about the writer is saying that he's met a woman who, or seen a woman at least, from afar, who resembled the great love of his life, and he's just reminiscing and saying that even though he's seen someone who looks like the great love of his life, all of his affection is still reserved for the person who actually was the love of his life. But again, this is part of my campaign to show that Mario could still sing after 1952. This is from the very last year of his life, just 4 months before he died, in fact. And it's really interesting because he does the song absolutely straight, no histrionics, and there are a couple of high A's in the song that he clears with such ease you don't realize they're high A's until you go to the piano and sound the notes out. And it's from an album called Mario Lanza Sings Caruso Favorites. Caruso recorded this one, again, not long before he died, but he did a lot of slushing around with it, which Mario was sometimes accused of doing. Mario does this absolutely straight. This is just clear, straightforward, beautiful singing where all the poignance of the song is in the voice itself. Now, doesn't that just reek of poignance and beauty without any histrionics necessary to
totally make saying it textbook straight.
Mm.
Yep. And you hear the difference in the voice at the end. It's just a different sound. Now here we go. Here's one that you've also requested that will go back to the earlier years, and you'll hear the difference. And remember, this man was only 38 when he passed away, so it was not as if he was in his 60s at all. Here we go. This one, believe it or not, was Liberace's theme song. But I think it's sung a little better than Liberace did.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut trees, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you. In everything that's light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon.
That is available, that song. It's a timeless standard, and I think one of his greatest from that Coke Show period.
Yes, well, they originally put it on the flip side of the Student Prince album. Do you remember that? When they released the soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
they put several Coke ballads on the B-side, and they were very good. It was a very well-chosen selection. I'll See You Again was there. Romance, which has been quite hard to get hold of. It is now out on CD. One Night of Love and I'll Be Seeing You. And you know, that song goes back to the 1930s, and it was a great favorite of the troops during World War II. And it was one of the songs
absolutely
made especially popular by Vera Lynn.
Yeah, the British singer.
Mm.
Correct? Vera Lynn.
Yes. Vera Lynn, and she's still alive at close to 100 years old.
So is the one he should have made a film with. I'll get to that in a minute. Well, can you? We've got enough time here. I'd like to. I'm going to do the Chenier, but this one I think is unique, and it gives a portrait of how he could reach in and pull out the anguish. This is the flip side of falling in love with someone. This is what happens at the end of a relationship, at cor ingrato. And could you do a real quick set for this? I think it's worth playing.
Oh, this, I presume, is this the Coke version or the studio recording from 1949?
Studio.
This was one of the four numbers he recorded with Constantine Kalinicus at his first recording session in 1949. He did all of them in one take. They included Kejeli da Manina from Mavoem, Celeste Aida from Aida, Mamma Mia Che Voce Pe, the Neapolitan song, and this one, Cor Ingrato, Ungrateful Heart, and it's lamenting his betrayal by a faithless hussy, and boy, is his rage volcanic.
Cadarì, perché mi dice sti parole amore, perché mi voglio cuore tu remiendo cadarì, e non te scurrerò, cataggio da cuore cadarì, e non te scurrerò. Cadarì, te cadarì che venne dicerò, spogliò che mi da spose me, e tu non c'è pienza sto dolore mio, e non c'è pienza tu, e non te ne fu.
I've often wondered what it must have been like to be in that studio. Those musicians, probably many of them had no idea what to expect. They assembled and they rehearsed, and here comes his vocalist in there, and it must have been really something.
I imagine their reaction must have been along the lines of, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
Or what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
You know, when he comes in the second time with the reprise, Cor Ingrato, and he just shrieks it. He doesn't bother with the notes. He just screams it. And I mentioned that all of those numbers were done in one take. It's interesting, isn't it, that the producer for RCA, who was overseeing the recordings, didn't ask him to do that again and sing the notes, please, Mr. Lancer.
That's funny. That's very funny. I couldn't even imagine that. He must have been incredulous at what he had just heard.
I don't think so.
Truly amazing.
Not only after that one, but after the Cajeli de Manina, which we played the last time.
Well,
which was,
that's right. One of the most beautiful arias, in 4 minutes and something long, and to do four of these in one day, perfectly in one take. Again, definitive recordings. All right, you want to set up the chenier now, the intermezzo? Not the intermezzo, improviso.
Which is a kind of impromptu tirade sung by the poet Andrea Chenier at what we might now regard as a high society cocktail party in revolutionary France. And there are two themes really to the aria. One is love and the other is rage against oppression. And he weaves the two together, and he's telling a young lady in the aristocracy that she shouldn't, as yet she doesn't know what love is, but she shouldn't deride the word, because love is the life and soul of the world. The words that conclude the aria, amor divino donno, non lo schernir del mondo animae vita, è l'amor. Of the world, life and love is the animation and love is, I'm sorry, is love. I'm getting a bit confused here trying to recall the lyrics, but it's really remarkable at the conclusion of the aria, the way he uses the first utterance of the word love, amor. He sustains the rolled R as a springboard to go up to the final B flat where the word amor is repeated. So you get, non conoscete amor divino donno. Now it sounds quite unremarkable when I just speak it like that, but as the climax to this remarkable aria, it is truly captivating. And again, the musicians must have thought at the end, what the heck just happened? And I did speak about this recording to Constantine Kalinicus, who's the conductor for it, and he recalls it as being one of Mario's absolute finest moments, which it is, and we don't hear it that often, so it's good to have this opportunity to play it. Un di all'azzurro spazio from Andrea Chenier.
Colpito qui m'avete, ovvio geloso cielo, il più puro palpitare dell'anima. Or vedrete, fanciulla, qual poema è la parola amore qui causa di scherno. Un dì all'azzurro spazio guarda il profondo e ai prati colmi di viole pioveva allora il sole e folgorava d'oro il mondo, pare alla terra un immane tesoro.
voli pien d'amore pregar, varcai d'una chiesa la soglia, e l'amprete nelle nicchie dei santi e della Vergine accumulava doni. E al sordo orecchio un tremolo vegliardo invano chiedeva pane e non se ne la mano. Varcai degli abiti di luscio con uomini canoniavano stemmiando il suolo che l'erario appena sazia e contro Dio scagliava e contro gli uomini le lacrime dei figli. In cotanta miseria la patrizia prove che fa sull'occhio vostro esprime umanamente qui un guardo di pietà. Con Dio guardato a voi, siccome un angelo che dissi, ecco la bellezza della vita. Giovinetta bella, d'un poeta non disprezza del detto, udite, non conoscete schernir del mondo anima e vita e l'amor.
The life and soul of the world is love. Those are the words I was struggling for, Jeff, and set up, and that's the way he finished that aria so magnificently, heroically and irresistibly. And I think it's a great way for us to finish. The life and soul of the world is love. And
indeed,
the life and soul of Mario, I think, was love.
Indeed. It's all there. It's all there. Thank you, Lindsay, very much for being here tonight. It was a real joy. And I think we maybe made some new friends for this wonderful voice. Thank you.
I hope so. And thank you, Jeff, for the opportunity. And thank you for everything you do for Mario, too.
Always. Always. All right. We'll talk.
Arrivederci.
Indeed. Good night, Lindsay. Lindsay Perigo and his book, The One Tenor, is a remarkable book, and I hope you'll get one. Okay, that's our program this evening. We'll be back tomorrow night. Take good care.